the arguments from the petitioner. Mr. Boyle will hold.
May it please the court. I'm appearing on behalf of petitioners, which are municipalities located in the Gulf States Utilities Service Territory. In addition, briefs have been filed by the Office of Public Utility Counsel, and they've ceded their time to me today and to Ms. Cass Stevens, and by the Attorney General, appearing for the Texas State Agencies and the North Star Steel Company, a company located in the Gulf States Utility Service Territory. To put this case in its proper perspective, this stems from a rate case that was filed on November 18, 1986, and it was driven by really one issue, and that was the prudence of the construction of a nuclear power plant, which was known as River Bend, and located in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The final cost of the plant was approximately $4.5 billion. Prior to the initiation of the rate case, there had been an inquiry into the prudence of the plant begun because it's so difficult to get all the work done in a case that's that massive and that large in the time period that ordinarily exists for rate cases. And that inquiry into the prudence of the rate case was consolidated with the rate case, and all the testimony was incorporated in with the rate case. This particular matter that's before you now involved 100 witnesses. There were experts from all
live?
Of the United...
Are those live or...
Yes, 100, there were 100 pre-filed pieces of testimony, and each of the witnesses took the stand. There were almost 50 for the company and 50 for the interveners who appeared. The trial of this matter, the prudence portion of the case, took approximately 7 months to do. The company, we had due process to a very extensive degree, an opportunity to prove up the reasonableness of the cost and the prudence of the River Bend issue. The company filed direct. The interveners were permitted to file direct. The company then filed rebuttal. The company was permitted live rebuttal. And ultimately, the staff filed some testimony later, and the company was given another round of testimony and supplemental testimony that they filed. So they had four shots at it here. There were witnesses of various kinds and various theories trying to prove up whether the cost of $4.5 billion was reasonable. And many different techniques were used. Some regression techniques in comparing to other plants around the country, productivity comparisons of man hours and unit rates, and a reconciliation, cost reconciliation performed by Stone and Webster, where they took each and every cost change and tried to explain why that cost change occurred in the life of the project. The project was originally estimated as $1.729 billion and then went to the final number of $4.5 billion. If
that
you were
the
to...
the original estimate of the utility as to what River Bend would cost?
Yes, that was the original definitive estimate. There were other estimates when they began earlier, which were in the, $300 to $500 million range.
But originally they estimated it cost $300 to $500 million and it ended up costing $4.5 billion?
That's correct. And I wouldn't describe that those were conceptual estimates before they actually got out to the field.
When was the definitive cost estimate of $2.2 million made by the PUC?
That was an estimate of what they said the estimate should have been, that the utility had not properly estimated what it would cost. When they came up with the $1.729 billion, they said they could build the plant in, as I recall it, 60 months. And at that point in time, I don't think any other utility had done it in the United States and maybe the world. So in reviewing the definitive cost estimate, the commission felt that that was not prudent and not reasonable. Remember the standard here that is to prove each and every dollar in cost for the plant, whether it was prudently incurred or not, or whether it was reasonable. And it's basically a negligence standard. What would a reasonable utility have done under the same or similar circumstances? If you looked at the record here, and your ceiling is about 20 feet, and you took the record in this case and put it in a filing cabinet, your filing cabinet would go to the ceiling. It's down in your basement here. That's the record in this case. The company itself has said, the record in this proceeding is enormous. In 132 hearing days, over 100 witnesses appear. Their prepared testimony covers over thousands of pages and cross-examination, many, many thousands more. Thousands more pages of exhibits were received in evidence. and this is the company speaking now. Every factual, legal, and policy issue was thoroughly explored and canvassed.
But even with all of that, the Court of Appeals concluded that the commission had not passed on the prudence question.
Well, I think as we'll talk in a moment, we'll talk about the board over here. And clearly the commission made a decision. It just as if you were in a case and you were suing for your attorney's fees or for anything else of value and you sued for $40,000 and the jury says, well, from a preponderance of the evidence, what did you show? They come back and say it's $20,000. And essentially what happened here, the company filed what would be the equivalent of an original petition, which is called the Statement of Intent. And they said, we want $4.5 billion. We spent it. But that doesn't stop the inquiry. They have two primary things that they have the burden of proof on. One, to show that the cost is used and useful, that is the plant and supplying electricity to its customers. But secondly, that those costs were prudently incurred. And so that is the inquiry that this case took. The question was asked, one question, how much, this is what any fact finder and the commission as fact finder was asked, how much of the $4.5 billion do you find was prudently incurred? That was the issue. And the commission answered it. They said $2.273 billion was prudently incurred. The question was asked and answered. And as you can see in finding fact number 164 on the board, and I think it's been distributed to you, it's on your second page of your handout. The first sentence. The preponderance of the evidence in this case establishes that $2.273 billion capital costs were prudently and reasonably incurred. The question was asked, how much of the $4.5 billion was prudently incurred? And the question was answered. $2.273 billion. Now you have a follow-up question that you say, well, suppose the question was asked and was answered, what do we do then? Does an administrative agency then have the authority to open up and reopen in some implied power? Does it have that authority? And that's the next question. If you look at PURA, there's language that says they should be able to do everything reasonable and necessary to carry out its duties. But I think if you look at the history of the cases, when you're talking about the authority of relitigation, something that is that broad, and something that is that, as this court has said in Westheimer, should be given only in the most extraordinary type situation, that you don't have that kind of a situation here. You have several major problems when you go to look to see whether they have authority under the Public Utility Regulatory Act to relitigate. First, when you look at PURA, there's a section there which relates to certificates of convenience of necessity. That's section 62A. And it specifically provides, by its express terms, the mechanism when you can reopen. There is no other mention in the Public Utility Regulatory Act about reopening in any other situation. One would then conclude, if they can express it here, then you shouldn't imply it someplace else. But more importantly, when do you, and when do the cases, if you look at all the cases that have permitted administrative agencies to reopen, when do they do it? One, when you haven't had an opportunity to litigate. And that makes sense. And the court cases, not administrative law cases, really, the ones that have been cited in the respondent's briefs, really go to that. Not a real opportunity to litigate. Clearly, there was litigation, the opportunity to litigate, for months and months to a record that I've never participated in before. And clearly, I don't think the company can say they didn't have their opportunity. Secondly, there are other times when courts will allow reopening, and what is the other area where that occurs? That is when there's been a material change in circumstances. There is no material change here. All the documents that relate to the growth. And when you're doing the prudence investigation, just like a negligence investigation, you have to look at the same or similar circumstances at the time of the accident, or in this case, at the time the plant was being built. That's done. That plant was constructed from 1979 to 1984. You're left with whatever that tells you, because you're judging by the standards that occurred in that time frame not in some other. Today, what they did, one might conclude, was either entirely proper or entirely imprudent. But we do not use today's standards for judging the conduct that occurred from 1979 to 1984. That's locked in history.
But even if the record should not be reopened, hasn't the PUC, in effect, refused to decide this issue?
Not at all. As we look at...
They say in their briefs in this court that they have.
Yes. And that,
so you're sort of confronted with they're taking a position against yours in this case that they have not decided.
Well, merely because by in language in the conclusion of law, for example, one says, I'd like to reopen this case or I'd like to reexamine it, doesn't mean they haven't decided it. What they're saying is, I want to relitigate the case. Then the question that you have to decide is, does the PUC have that authority? What happens here? What are they really asking for? The respondent. They're saying it's res judicata on the 2.273 if we make our burden of proof. That's res judicata. But if we fail to meet our burden of proof, it's not. Does that make sense?
What if the commission had said in this case, in no uncertain terms in their findings and conclusions, we're just not going to decide this issue now?
Fine.
Either way.
Fine.
Then what?
Then they had lots of other options available to them. Again, that's a test to see whether you ought to have an administrative agency reopen. There are lots of things they could have done. They could have remanded to the administrative law judge and just said, this is a bad record. We can't make a decision. Go back, develop the record, and then send it back to us. Secondly.
You say they could have done that.
They could have done that. They don't need this extraordinary relitigation, reopening. No one has disputed here that this is a final order. This order is final. It's done. Those rates are in effect. The $2.273 billion generated a $75 million rate increase for every year, for 38 years or whatever it is into the future. That's done. What else could have the commission done? They could have said there were about three or four motions for rehearing. No one could tell exactly when the final order occurred. Okay. The commission could have said at any point in time, you've raised these points, go back, let's have a hearing, let's put in some more evidence. Let's develop this issue a little further. Didn't happen.
I'm clear on that.
Now, surely.
Because the position you're taking is not an attempt to cut off the right for rehearing. The Gulf States did not seek rehearing on this matter. Is that right?
No, they did file motions for rehearing. They were denied by operational law. The commission ruled. I thank you my time, and I'm going to share the rest of my time now with Ms. Castillo. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, I'm Grace Castevens, representing the cities of Bridge City et al. In this proceeding, petitioners. I'd like to expand a bit on what was actually litigated and decided in the proceeding before the commission. In support of the company's last request for a rate increase, the company asked the commission to find its entire investment in its $4.5 billion nuclear power plant reasonable and prudent. That was the main and overriding issue in their request for a rate increase. Virtually all the record that Mr. Boyle has been talking about addressed that question. The commission had to decide that issue in order to rule on the company's request for a rate increase. It was determinative. It was the key issue. If more of the cost of rear bend had been found to be prudent, a larger rate increase would have been required by law. Likewise, if a smaller amount of the investment in rear bend had been found prudent, the commission would have had to order a smaller rate increase. So it was the pivotal issue. It determined the magnitude of the rate increase. What would have happened if the commission had refused to decide the issue? They couldn't have come to the bottom line. They couldn't have figured out how much rate increase to give Gulf States. It was the essential issue in the case. The commission did exactly as it had to do. It weighed the evidence and decided, based on the record, how much of the cost to construct River Bend had been proved reasonable and prudent. That's what conclusion of law 18A is, finding of fact 164 is. It is the result of the weighing of the evidence and the determination of how much of the cost to construct River Bend had been proved prudent. The company could not prove in all of that evidence that they presented to the commission, they could not prove any more of the cost to construct River Bend than $2.273 billion to be reasonable and prudent. They could not prove their 4.5 construction cost to be reasonable and prudent. It's really simple.
Why didn't the PUC just find they didn't do it? Why didn't, and instead of this, maybe they didn't carry their burden, or we're going to look at it on rehearing or subsequent proceeding, why didn't they just say this much and no more?
Finding the fact 164A is their determination of how much was proved prudent. The commission simply wanted to give the company another trial on the same issue. That's all there was to it. The commission wanted to give the company another trial. If I could use an analogy, suppose that you had your bench built by a contractor, and the contractor sent you a bill for $1 million for the bench. And you got the bill and you said, we're not going to pay $1 million for this bench. It's just not worth that. And the contractor says, okay, and he sues you. And you have a trial, and the trial court, either by jury verdict or by trial to the bench, determines that the contractor established what you said, namely about $80,000 was a, or $20,000 or whatever, was a reasonable cost of bench. Say the trial court says, you know, the contractor only proved $20,000 to be reasonable, and we'll give you $20,000 now, but I think you ought to be able to come back and sue the court again to get the rest of the money. That's exactly what the commission did here. You only established 2.273 to be prudent, but, you know, maybe next time out you're going to do a better job. Maybe you can make this that some more is prudent next time around. And so that's what they did in the order. They said, okay, we find $2.273 billion to be prudent based on the record in this cause. Come, if you want to, come on back again, and we'll just hear the case again.
But if the bench had been in two parts.
I beg pardon?
If the bench had been in two parts, wouldn't it be possible for the trial judge to have a severance?
If it had been the bench and the chairs, say. But that's the problem. That was not the issue.
Well, what are things, page 133 and 145, and isn't it important whether they are or are not segregated?
The $4.5 billion is not segregated into discrete pieces, the diesel generators, the pipes, the pipe hangers. It's not referable to any part of the plant, as in your example. So it's not referable to the chairs or the bench. It's just the total cost of the project. The evidence was not segregated. The $2.273 billion does not refer to chairs or bench or pipe hangers or safety-related pipes or containment building. It is just a piece of the total cost of the project. So it's very much like saying $80,000 is a reasonable cost for the bench and $1 million isn't. But come back and try again, and if you can prove some more to be prudent, well, maybe we'll give you a judgment for some more later on.
But in answer to your example, if the jury came back in response to a question, how much, and answered $20,000, but we are troubled by this because we think there probably was some more, and we don't want to be stuck with this $20,000 number, and another jury tomorrow ought to reconsider the rest of this case because there may be something to it, wouldn't there be some problem with that verdict?
Well, if the party with the burden of proof has the burden of establishing how much of, in this case, the cost to construct River Bend is prudent, if the judge takes the jury determinations and renders judgment, there is a problem with allowing another jury to re-decide the same issue.
But isn't there also a problem with rendering a judgment on that verdict?
Well, I think it's definitional that if the jury says we can only find from a preponderance of the evidence that $20,000 was prudent, and we think that there may be some more evidence out there in the universe that wasn't presented to us that may establish that more than $20,000 was prudent, I think it would be error on the part of the jury to allow any more than $20,000. They must, based on their charge, find, based on a preponderance of the evidence, how much of the cost of the bench was reasonable and prudent. They can't reach out and speculate that maybe if a different case had been presented, they might have found more. to be prudent, and...
I agree they shouldn't be allowed to, but what if they do?
Well, in this case, they didn't. They found what the record showed in this case, finding of fact 164A. And the decision was, the relitigation part of it was just, we want to give you another trial. Gulf States got the benefit of finding of fact 164A. Ever since the final order in docket 7195, they've been charging higher rates. They've been collecting higher rates. There is no contention in this case that that wasn't a final order setting Gulf States rates. That would be tantamount to our contractor in the bench example collecting from the court the $20,000 and then being told you can come back and sue us again and maybe you'll get another judgment. Or maybe it's tantamount to saying the contractor can sue us once for $50,000 and sue us again for another $500,000 and sue us again for another $500,000 for the same bench. That's what the doctrine of res judicata is all about. You only get one trial and one judgment on one claim.
I assume it's clear nobody asked for what the commission did in the conclusion of Law 10. I mean, was that ever suggested by either party? You didn't conclude the Law 10, not that, but it's the one that says we might come back.
Oh, the one that says that we can relitigate? That is just the reflection of their intention to give Gulf States another trial on the same issue.
Did either party ask for that?
I don't think so. I think that just... Gulf States clearly, after the final order, wanted another opportunity to prove the cost of river bend prudent. But I don't think anybody submitted any conclusions of law or findings of fact that, for that matter, the commission doesn't do it that way. They internally draft their own findings of fact and conclusions of law. And if I could use another chart. The trial court looked at the findings of fact and conclusions of law also looked at the issue that was that the company is trying to relitigate in the new case, the new rate case, and the trial court found that they were indeed trying to litigate the very same issue that they tried in the last case. The trial court concluded that that would permit them to litigate again an issue contrary to the doctrine of res judicata. What you have before you is an appeal of the trial court's injunction on that issue. The standard is, did the trial court abuse its discretion? The trial court looked at the record, looked at the order, looked at the orders from the new docket that show what the commission is trying to litigate in this new case, and he found, number five, that the commission directly ruled on the prudence issues in the last case, and 10 is Gulf State's trying to litigate again the very same issue in this new case. We would suggest that the trial court certainly did not abuse its discretion in issuing a permanent injunction. It correctly applied the doctrine of res judicata.
But even if the... Right under Rule 41?
Yes, Your Honor, I do, because if you review the record, contrary to Ms. Cass Stevens and Mr. Boyle's characterization, there was not equal litigation on each and every dollar of the $4.5 billion. There was a healthy contest on whether whether Gulf State should have restarted construction in 1979. That was heavily fought out. But the issue of what happens, and the commission decided that it was prudent for the company to begin construction in 1979 at a cost of up to $2.273 billion, which the commission and the examiners arrived at that cost.
If it's helpful to look at Rule 41, then I guess it's also helpful to look at the cases that have been handed down by this and other courts under Rule 41?
Your Honor, by analogy, it is helpful to look at Section 41, but you still cannot ignore the limits or lack thereof of limits in PURA on the operation of the commission plus the commission's obligation to balance the interests of the ratepayers and the utility.
You're aware that it's been held to be an abuse of discretion to employ a severance under Rule 41 to save a party from its failure to prepare properly and present evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. But the question is, was this issue that is now to be, as it were, relitigated a matter of proper preparation, or one that was actually brought up during the course of the proceeding? The issue before us was developed in Rate Case 7195. It didn't exist when we began.
Can the one point, or how is the 1.4 segregated? Does it apply to a different part of the project? There was some.
It's roughly the what you could call the cost overruns, or in 1979, when the company decided to begin construction, the commission found that that was a prudent decision, even if the cost had been $2.273 billion, which was slightly more than the cost that the company itself had estimated. But that, of course, leaves a fair amount of money over and left over of what it did actually cost. And so then the question is, did the company justify that amount of money? And the commission said, based on two witnesses on its staff, there was testimony both by Mr. Flan and Mr. Hazen Povarik, I believe, that there simply was insufficient evidence on this part of the question, and that it would be better to come back at another time and fully focus on that part of the question, so that it is more like a severable issue.
At that point in the proceeding, I think the Gulf State was arguing that it had presented ample evidence to justify getting the entire amount.
I think the Gulf State has consistently said that they wished that they had been able to get the entire amount in rate base at that point in time. Yes,
well, and argued that they satisfied their responsibilities under the Act to establish the prudency of that entire investment.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the other side was saying, no, you haven't. And the commission came down somewhere in between, didn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, they did. We will not give you this in rate base at this time, but we will allow you in some future proceeding, while you've been being penalized by not getting a return, to see if you can prove this particular segment of it prudent.
Counselor, are you saying that the commission determined that the $2.273 billion satisfied the claim?
Yes, sir.
And that's part of their location. If only $1 billion had been proved up, they'd have had to have awarded more at the initial hearing in order to satisfy the claim.
It could be that $1 billion would have been too small to have satisfied Duquesne, although...
Well, I think the number clearly is $50 million. The commission, regardless of the proof, would have to...
That is
regardless of the quality of the proof, would have to consider other factors.
That is what Section 2 and 16 and 37 of PURA seem to indicate, that it's not a simply straightforward adjudicatory matter, but a balancing of the interests of the... where they are to decide the public interest, not just take a particular party side.
If the company is going broke because it didn't get a high enough rate on the first go-round, how many more hearings can it have in order to say we ultimately proved up, we got the full point, we wisely spent the $4.5 billion? Can it just keep going until the company is no longer going bankrupt?
No, Your Honor, I think the commission is subject to an abuse of discretion standard on how many times can it let someone try to prove up a particular issue. But as an example, the $1.45 billion, had only $1 billion of that been put into rate base at 13% return, it's $10 million a month that Gulf States has been foregoing, or the ratepayers haven't been paying. It's not a small issue that we're all arguing over, and it's not a small impact on the company or the ratepayers, and the commission wanted to make the proper decision, not the hasty decision.
Well, I understand. The company goes broke, the ratepayers not going to get electricity. So there's got to be some way to balance it out, and I'm trying to figure out how much time and how many hearings you have to get it balanced.
I think the commission does not have unlimited authority to continue to allow them to try again and again and again. But in this circumstance, given how much was at issue, that it was the first time the commission had to look at this, that the $1.45 billion was actually elucidated within the rate case itself, and that they were able to arrive at a figure that would reach the confiscatory limits and put the rates into effect, that that was the right decision in this case. But it doesn't mean that they would take 700 more tries to do it.
How close to the deadline did the commission go before England? The findings and conclusions that we're looking at here?
They actually, without Gulf States extending that or issuing new, in response for new interim rates were imposed, and Gulf States extended the deadline, which only Gulf States can do, we would have passed it, and they would have been able to put in filed rates, which were two or three times what the commission actually allowed them to charge.
So there was a method by which the time limits could have been extended?
Only if Gulf States, it's Gulf States and Gulf States alone, or the utility and the utility alone who can extend.
You mean without that, this hearing could have gone on, but they could have been charging rates that were too
No, sir. Actually, 43D has never been interpreted, but it appears to say that the commission loses its jurisdiction and that the utility will place into effect those rates that it filed. So if that means lose your jurisdiction, then the hearing stops.
One other question. I understand you don't believe the commission's order was final on this matter. If it had been final, would it be appropriate to apply the doctrine of res judicata in a rate-making procedure?
At least as to regard rate-based issues, yes, Your Honor, and the commission does do that. Once a decision has been made on a rate-based issue, it is determinative for the proceedings in the future.
So that's the doctrine of res judicata. This is not the first time the commission or utility companies like Gulf States have confronted it. It has come up in the past in rate-making proceedings in front of the commission?
Yes, Your Honor. They do not willy-nilly retry issues in the rate-based matter. Obviously, every time you go in, salaries and how much overhead and that sort of thing is retried because those change circumstances. But the amount of money that's been previously determined that was invested in a particular power plant is not retried once it's finally decided.
So if there's a retrial here, you don't believe there should be any retrial of the 2.27 billion?
No, Your Honor, I believe
that part's res judicata.
I believe so.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Your Honors, I've got a lot of ground to cover, and so I'll try to talk quickly, but not so quickly.
What does the commission mean here by finding of either prudence or imprudence? Is that they're not taking a position on the burden of proof?
In conclusion, Law Number 10, I think they're saying that they're talking about the $1.45 billion,
right.
And they're saying that they didn't meet their burden of proof to show it was prudent, and they couldn't tell whether it was prudent or imprudent.
Well, it says a finding of imprudence. It doesn't say either to find it's prudent or to fail to find it's prudent.
Well, I think all I can say is that's not the law. as you will see from the earlier exhibit we put up earlier, and it's in the packet that was handed out, the commission properly applied the rule of law, and that is, as to any matters which are challenged, the utility has the burden of proof, particularly as it relates to invested capital or as to operating and maintenance costs. And that has been the rule.
So you vigorously disagree with Gulf States on that?
Yes, and I agree with the Attorney General on that matter. And that is, I think, consistently the way it is applied. It should be remembered that the first time we tried this case, approximately $12 million was spent. The company took the position in its brief before the commission that the record refutes any claim that the cost of River Bend has not been adequately explained and clearly supports the proposition that any further cost reconciliation would be unwarranted, unduly expensive, and would accomplish no more than verifying the reasons already provided for cost increases on the River Bend project.
Where is that found?
That is found in the post-hearing brief by Gulf States Utilities.
And the $4 million figure, is that in the record?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
$4 million figure.
The $12 million for litigating?
Maybe I misunderstood. What was the cost of litigating this proceeding?
$12 million. It is in the attachments to the final order and examiner, final order. What we have here is the questions were asked and answered. The question before the commission, the fact question before the commission was not $2.273 billion. The question was how much of the plant that you're seeking to put into rate base were those costs prudently incurred? There was no question about $2.273 billion. The question was how much of the $4.5 billion was prudently incurred? The whole $4.5 billion was litigated. There is no separate item or race or anything else regarding $2.273 billion. It is the plant. That plant is in rate base now. And that's what they determined the value of that plant to be. It was asked and answered. If we adopt the rule of law that the respondents would like us to follow, they will be able to participate in the future by themselves. There will be no balancing of interest. There was more money spent on this case than the commission's entire budget. If we go back and say, okay, it's only res judicata if they meet their burden of proof, but if they don't, it isn't. And then, all right, well, maybe next time they'll prove up another $800 million. Maybe we'll, and so that's res judicata. And then maybe we'll do another $400 million, and that becomes res judicata. But there's not going to be anybody in there cross-examining. I mean, it was a, you might imagine that in a case of this sort, when other parties are trying to come in and litigate with the kind of money and the length of time, and the number of witnesses and the number of opportunities to make your case, if we go on, we're violating every principle that this court announced in the Westheimer decision. That is, it's not, re-litigation is not to be favored. And the area when we had an opportunity to present our case, truly, completely, in every possible way, well, when there are no changed circumstances.
Let me ask you a question before we run out of time.
Surely.
A question that's troubling me. There's a body of case law that says rate making is a legislative proceeding. And are we to overrule all these cases now?
No.
Because the doctrine of res judicata is certainly not applicable to the legislature. Why should it be in a rate making proceeding? Or do we have to overrule all those cases?
I don't. You do not. And I don't want to string citation. Right now, we'll submit a short post-submission brief, but there cases involving rate making are generally regarded as quasi-judicial. The authority of the commission when you get into rulemaking, that's quasi-legislative. And generally the courts have made that kind of distinction, although some courts are not, the line is not as hard and fast as it ought to be, but I think clearly when you're in the rate making area, it's a court proceeding. It functions in every respect like a court proceeding. And generally speaking, I think courts today are regarding rate making situations as quasi-judicial, not quasi-legislative.
But you do admit that there's a case out there that says legislative. It's a legislative function.
Yes, but I'm not clear whether those are, I think there are some cases, yes. I'm not sure this court has said that. I don't think there's any question as this case went forward there was a balancing. This was the only nuclear power plant built after Three Mile Island. It is one of the most expensive.
Only in the United States.
Yes. And it is an extraordinary, it's one of the most expensive power plants in the United States. Our argument when representing the interveners was that they were imprudent to construct it after Three Mile Island. They had spent about $400 million at that point getting ready to construct the plant. If the commission had decided that, obviously the disallowance would have been much larger. I will represent to you that the commission weighed the alternatives. They considered every kind of potential disallowance, every kind of impact that might occur, and came up with a mechanism. They were reaching out, if you read the final order meetings, to find a way to come up with a number that they felt was fair.
Well, what about this argument that they were just running out of time? They did not have an opportunity to thoroughly consider this matter because they were bumping up against the time limit.
I think it was fairly well understood that the company was committed to giving the commission the time it needed to consider this matter and to grant it two interim rate increases while this proceeding was going forward.
Why was the company committed to that?
Well, I think that the company wanted the commission to have a full and fair decision to consider the record, to consider the evidence, and not make a hasty decision, one that was not well-reasoned. And I think by the same token, the commission showed its good faith toward the company in granting two interim rate increases while this matter was going forward.
Is this a situation where the commission just made a mistake in this conclusion of law number 10?
I think it's excuse me.
And the company's just going to have to eat it. I mean, they're just going to have
well,
to
I
eat
don't,
that because of the commission's mistake, or is this
no.
kind of invited, invited error?
No,
the company said, look, all we can prove is $2.2 million, but please give us another chance, and maybe we'll scrounge around and find some more proof. The commission went along with that figure.
I'd rather not speculate on exactly, and I don't know exactly what the reasoning was for doing as they did. But clearly this case was totally and completely litigated and by any definition of the term. There are no new facts. The company has fully admitted there are no new facts to come forward with. They've been developed since 1984.
What does the record show, if it does, about the overrides? Apparently that's what we're talking about, is the part they didn't get in setting the rates with the overruns. Were the overruns passed off during the hearing, or was it?
No, well, they were hotly litigated, and the company took the position they had properly shown that they were reasonable and prudent, the cost overrun. The commissioners looked at the record, this very extensive record, over the final order meetings took place over a series of months. There were many, many meetings. This was a hotly debated and contested case. And they looked at it and said, the evidence just doesn't rise to the level where you've been able to show and explain why these overruns occurred. In conclusion, the questions that are out there have been answered. Is there any dispute that the company was requesting $4.5 billion? No. Is there any question that the commission only found $2.273 billion prudent of the $4.5 billion? No. Is there any question of changed circumstances not available when first tried to justify reopening? No. Is there any question that the commission found that the company did not meet its burden of proof above $2.273 billion? No. And I see that my time's up.
Let me ask you just one more question in a little different area. I understand you think that when you have a client to represent in this case, you think that applying the doctrine of race judicata will be helpful to the consumer group that you represent. But given the historic tendency, without any specific reference to this agency, regulatory agencies to befriend those that they regulate, aren't there some real dangers to the public and to consumers of applying the doctrine of res judicata strictly with reference to regulatory agencies? This opinion is going to be read however it comes out and applied in different situations with different agencies, perhaps.
I think you have to have a consistent rule of res judicata. And if everyone has a fair and full opportunity to participate, and the interveners did, then I think, and all the issues get fully litigated in that process, then I think the doctrine of res judicata is appropriate and should apply. And in the long run, everyone benefits from it.
But if that should bankrupt the company, that doesn't do anybody any good.
Well, I think clearly, as we indicated, the commission was committed to balancing the interest, and I think they did, of the alternatives that were out
there. They took that into consideration.
Secondly, the company did come in, they received two interim rate increases, they're back for additional rate increases now, and will be looked at. I think the commission wants to deal fairly with the utility companies, and so I don't think they're going to be left in the cold.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much.